Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Now, this is a little bit non-traditional opening right here, but I thought it would be appropriate.
One more for the folks out in Chinese.
On a Friday. Boss, the man, the myth, the legend himself, Bruce Springsteen, on a Friday, dancing in the dark. I think the video is the first time any of us remember seeing Courtney Cox, right? Yeah, she in that video. Yeah, I remember they said, that's staged. I'm like, what? Come on. You kidding me? This is his concert live from Barcelona. If you ever get a chance to watch that, I would tell you, if you want to spend a few hours of enjoyable, you know, time, yeah, it's probably close to 6 or 7 hours, but go ahead and watch Springsteen live from Madison Square Garden. It's an awesome concert. Yeah, it was filmed. I want to say HBO filmed it. So the audio and the video are awesome. But yeah, in 2001, I think, or 2000, something like that. And it's fantastic. If you're not a fan, you'll become one. Yeah, live, unbelievable. And, you know, interviewing Tim McMahon, you know, made me laugh and made me think about it, and I started listening to Springsteen. So now when I'm building Studio One out my garage, I have him on during the day for a while. The concert in Barcelona is amazing. Yeah, I did not realize. I mean, he's been going to Europe forever. I didn't realize his following in Europe was that substantial. Exactly. But Springsteen, 3.5 hour concert. Yeah, unbelievable. And when you see him, I mean, he's funny. And it was interesting. Tim Lynch said, yeah, that's how he copes with his depression. That's when he feels euphoria. So he replicates it. It's just, I don't know. I see him and I was like, damn, that guy suffers from depression. I mean, he's such a, you know, an amazing performer, you know, but it's like, if you don't think that, right, you're kind of dumb. You're kind of dumb. So I want to play for you. This one, my favorite little snippets. So what I'll do is when I like something that I'm really not supposed to, so it's on a video or something, I'll record the audio off the video, and because I have those kind of capabilities, and then I just turn it into my own MP3 file and, you know, put it on my phone and stuff like that. So this is him at Madison Square Garden. So it's called, the video you want to watch is Springsteen Live at Madison Square Garden. And he gets to the part where he's going to introduce his band. And then, so that's what I want to play with for you. Remember, he's a New Jersey guy. Okay, with all that entails. Now, let me get this to the right spot. So this is him kind of doing his. If you listen to him, he does this kind of Billy Sunday thing during these concerts that he did. And the way he does it is very reminiscent of like a evangelical preacher from, you know, doing the big tent thing in the 50s and the 60s. You know, these guys, and you see video of it, and they're like, they're like screaming and yelling, their faces are red, and you know, it's crazy. So he does that. He affects that. And this is him. He's about ready to introduce his band. He's talking about he had gone to see a fortune teller. Right? It's kind of a funny thing.
Bar mitzvah!
Okay, hold on.
But you just don't stumble onto those things. You don't find those places by accident. You've got to seek them out and search after them.
He's talking about post-traumatic winning, by the way.
Here night after night after night after night. Because you can't get to those things by yourself. You got to have help. But that's where I want to go tonight, and I want you to go with me. Because I need to go with you. That's why I'm here. And tonight I want to throw a rock and roll exorcism. A rock and roll baptism. And a rock and roll bar mitzvah. That's right. We're going to do it all tonight. Everything right here. I want them waters to fall down on me and set me free. Set you free. But I stood one evening as a young man before a dark grove of trees. And I was frightened to pass through those trees, even though I knew that on the other side, the river of life was waiting. And there was cold beer at a reasonable price. And there were no fucking cell phones either. Pizza for everybody.
Now, how hilarious is that, right? I mean, the common man, right? This is his idea of heaven or a beautiful place. Cold beer at reasonable prices. No fucking cell phones and pizza for everybody. Come on, that's hilarious.
But I stood paralyzed by my own fears. And then a gypsy woman called me onward and she said, son, come here, let me help you. What you need, what's your line? And I told her what I did for a living. And she said, well, then what you need is you need a man. You need some help. And that's why I'm so glad to introduce here tonight on the piano, the Secretary of Intelligence, the Dean of the University of Musical Perversity, Professor Robinson on the piano.
Now, if you listen to him, he doesn't affect this persona on accident. I mean, he's an interesting dude when you hear him talk about the nuance of life. And I'm sure that he had to watch videos of guys like Billy Sunday, you know, these great, you know, huge, I don't know if great's the right word, but these extremely popular evangelical people that would travel the country and hold these revivals. And so he affects that, you know, throughout this thing. Funny. Interesting, too, I think, as a performer.
And now I want to introduce the minister of faith and friendship, keeper of all that is righteous on East Street, and star of the Sopranos television show, Little Stephen Van Zandt on the guitar. I want to introduce the foundation of the East Street Nation, the Tennessee Terror, Mr. Guy W. Talent. comes a man that brings the power night after night after night after night. The minister of the big beat and star of late night television. The mighty, mighty Max Weinberg. On the guitar, the godfather on the guitar, the minister of heart and spirit, the great, great Nils Lofgren.
He has an awesome band.
And on the organ, on the Hammond B3 organ and accordion, hailing from Flemington, New Jersey, the minister of mystery, Brother Dan Federice.
Now, this is my favorite part of the whole thing, where he introduces his wife. And I like, I'm not a big Patti Scalfa fan, but I like, she sings this right here. I think she sings the shit out of it.
And now, brunettes are fine and blondes are fun, but when it comes to getting a dirty job done, it, yeah, I said I'm looking for it. I'm searching for my baby.
He wrote a song called about redheads, and his wife's a redhead, and it's pretty kind of I don't want to say raunchy song. It's a little bit sexual, raunchy song. Yeah, and that's part of what he's singing right here.
I'm begging, baby, please. I'm down upon my knees in supplication, in sexification, in the love education.
The boss. But the biggest intro, as you would imagine, if you're any part of a Springsteen fan or know anything about his band, is Clarence Clemons. And he's pretty funny.
That's right. Last but not least, I'm talking about the Minister of Soul, Secretary of the Brotherhood, the next senator from the state of New York. Do I have to say his name? Do I have to say his name? Say who? Say who? Say who? Say who?
So when Clarence Clemons lets it rip, listen to this. Anyway, the song's called 10th Avenue Freeze Out. It's on, it's in the video, Springsteen Live from Madison Square Garden. But if you want some awesome concerts, I love watching concerts. I'll do that before I watch most TV. And those are two that I've purchased. I'll tell you another one that I love, I watched with Colleen, is One Direction live in, where are they? They're in Italy someplace. At an incredibly, like, storied soccer venue called San Siro in Milan, I think. Yeah. I'll watch that with Colleen anytime. I know it's crazy. The studio build out. Yeah. The YouTube studio build out. I'm working my way through, like the drywall's all good, right? But, you know, the whole taping and, you know, the mud part and then sanding it and get it all to look smooth. You know, high school educated guys roll in and do that stuff in like, you know, in like 2 hours. And you try to figure it out and then you try to, you know, the what it is to be a craftsman, right, with that trowel and get that that mud, that joint compound to look absolutely smooth and seamless. Somebody has to tell me how to do that, because, but let me just tell you the difference between old Mac and young Mac. Young Mac would have would put more elbow grease into it. Now I'm a little bit more circumspect in terms of the artistic side of it. Yeah, I am. And I'm like, all right, so we have to do this again, and we have to do this again, and then this will be this, and this will be that. But I'm going to tell you that getting all of that right is a pain in the ass, man. I'm ready to paint and be done with this shit. And we're not there yet. So, yeah, joint compound, sanding, getting it even. And then I'm, like, looking at it, thinking, you know, like, do I really need it that perfect? I mean, shit, if there's a blemish, I'll put something over it. Right? It's a set, for God's sakes. It's not my house. So, yeah. So I'll be done today with the painting. And then the only thing that's left is to align the walls together in the way the studio is going to be, which won't take very long. And then boom, done. Put the floor in probably tomorrow. And studio one complete. And again, I get excited thinking about it, in that, you know, whenever you can't figure something out, like how to put joint compound on, where do you go? You go to YouTube. And so I'm excited about the about the opportunity to touch more people and to relieve pain and show people a path. And so, that's through YouTube. And so I'm excited about that, and can't wait to get going. And the other thing it does is it gives me a great venue to do, like I did the other day, sitting at my desk, a great venue to do Zoom stuff, which I'm doing more of, right? And I won't call it a professional set, but it's going to be pretty fucking close, I can tell you that. Yeah. So I'm excited. There's no career on the planet like the one I have. I'm sure, well, there might be, but I don't know anybody who has one. And so I'm excited. The Greg Lotus, my friend, former New York Jet, he's going to join me today. We're going to talk about raising girls. I got an email from one of my Marines, and earlier this week, he's my driver when I was company commander. Almost killed me one night. He didn't almost kill me, but we were driving on goggles. And so when we were driving on goggles, I mean, my job as a company commander is normally to make sure, especially at night in the desert where you can get lost, and then if you get lost and it, you know, and you go out of your way for hours, your Marines don't get to sleep, or they sleep less, and you're conscious of that. So anyway, and I'm not one, I've never lost, yeah, as a Marine officer. Ever. And that's no bullshit. I like to navigate. I was good at navigation, and which is funny, because when I, you know, when you show up, they show you a map and it's all these like lines, and I don't mean grid lines. It's a terrain map. And so it has all these contours on it, and you're like, I didn't even know what I was. I was like, what is this? Like, how does this ever make sense to anybody? And then the thing that made it make sense to me was, I can't remember who said it, if you find the blue lines, that's the water, that's the low ground. And I went, oh, look at that. And so anyway, but I love to navigate. But at night, it's not easy because a lot of shit looks alike, especially in the desert. You would think in the desert it would be easy. It's not. People get lost as fuck. And I'll tell you what, which is demoralizing for the organization. And on this night, we had the motor march. I can't remember how far we were participating in an East Coast. I'd cut a drug deal with one of the East Coast Muse that was coming out to do their CACs. And I knew the guy. And who was a battalion commander. I called him up and I said, hey, would you like me to be a separate maneuver battalion? Or a separate element for your CACs? And he goes, yeah, that'd be awesome. I said, well, you know, I'd love to. And I knew they weren't bringing LAVs out, and I knew there was LAV ammunition in the CACs allocation. I said, well, if you'll let me shoot the LAV ammunition, I'll do it. And he's like, okay, awesome. So I have this drug deal going on, and so part of their scheme maneuver was we were supposed to motor march from here to there to kick off something, you know, the following morning. So the sun goes down and we LD at like 2200 and we're going someplace. And now you're driving blacked out. So your blackout light's on, and what does that mean? That means your driver's driving on either his goggles, or at the time they had this big fishbowl vision thing in front of them. And so your driver's driving on that. And that means you're the vehicle commander, which was not me, which was a corporal. He's on goggles and he's looking. And I had mine, but I dropped down and kind of take a little pen light out and look at the map and make sure that everything was checked out and whatnot. Because again, it was before the days of GPS. You had to actually fucking navigate. And so we're going, and the vehicle commander starts getting nervous. Hey, sir, are you sure I think we've gone too far. I think we're lost. And I'm like, no, we're not. And he's like, all right. And then 15 minutes later, he said, sir, I got a bad feeling. I said, it's all right, my son. Right? Dad knows what he's doing. And so anyway, so we're driving, and then, and I had my head kind of down, and I wasn't kind of braced in the turret of the LAV. And it's a LAV C-square. And my driver, Lance Corporal Harpster, holes, right, substantial holes, they look flat at night. It just looks like there's a shadow over them. So you know there's a depression, but it doesn't look like a big one. Well, this one was big enough for us to come to a stop. And we were only going maybe, you know, 20 miles an hour. We weren't going fast. But we hit this thing, and I remember getting thrown into the turret ring. And my neck hit. Right? And then I go down into the vehicle, and I'm like, oh, man. And I have my helmet on, right? And I, like, keep my headset. I'm like, what the fuck happened? And I stand up to see the corporal, like, he has his helmet off and he's punching Harpster in the back of the head with his helmet. I'm like, hey, knock it off. And I'm like, what happened? He's like, sir, I'm so sorry. He said, I just thought it was a depression. I didn't think it was a hole. And so anyway, he sends me an email earlier this week, and it says, Mac, having two young girls and yours are older, what advice would you give me for raising them to become strong, independent ladies? How would you suggest making sure they grow up and develop critical thinking skills? And so first thing, I think raising girls is a little bit different than raising boys, okay? But and so we'll talk to Greg about that. Greg's got two boys and a girl, and And so we'll talk to him a little bit about parenting. We'll talk to him a little bit about food. He's a big eater. And also, I saw a piece in that Victor Davis Hanson wrote. And it's called, I think, The Death of Journalism. And so I'm always interested about the people commenting about the media and its role in our democracy and whatnot. And he's pretty, I enjoy his work all the time, right? And the article's entitled "How American Journalism Died," and he starts like this. In 2017, the liberal Shorenstein Center on Media Politics and Public Policy at Harvard University found that 93% of CNN's coverage of the Trump administration was negative. The center found similarly negative Trump coverage at other major news outlets. The election year 2020 has only accelerated that asymmetrical bias to the point that major newspapers and networks and cable news organizations are now fused with the Joe Biden campaign. Sometimes stories are covered only in terms of political agenda, take COVID-19. Now, what's interesting is one of the major stories in the news today is the town hall that Joe Biden did last night, where it was dominated by Democrats who were in the audience, as opposed to the one the president did a couple days ago, and that it's nothing but softballs. The media assured us that the Trump administration's handling of the pandemic has been a disaster, but their conclusions are not supported by the evidence. In the United States, the coronavirus death rate per million people is similar to or lower than most major European countries, except for Germany. So what is the truth about that? All right. Death rate, COVID-19. By country. Let's see. Where is Los Estados Unidos? They've got every country on the planet in this thing. Case fatality rate. How about that? All right. Case fatality rate. The United States is at, I'm looking. The United States is at 3%. Okay. Among developed nations below us, you will find Denmark, Poland, Portugal, South Africa, Norway, Russia, go figure that. Okay, so north of 3. All right, who's above us? Brazil, Australia, Germany is at 3.5%. So Victor Davis Hanson is even wrong about that. Ireland's north of us. Canada's north of us. France is north of us. France at 7%. So this abysmal handling, what's your metric on it? The day-to-day soap opera. Anyway, again, regardless of how you feel about President Trump, in my opinion, so the story is what? The United States is lower than virtually every major developed nation in the world in terms of its case fatality rate. So is there another metric that you would judge us by? And if so, what is it? He goes on, when the virus was at its worst, before the partisan campaign of the election year heated up, the governors in our four largest states had only compliments for the Trump administration. Yeah, do you remember Governor Cuomo screaming, right? Ships, you know, sailing to New York City, hospitals being built, none of it necessary. Remember all that? Prominent progressives, such as House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, criticized the president for his travel ban relative to China. And Pelosi told people there was no reason to cancel planned travel to San Francisco's Chinatown. However, the real warping of the news is not just a matter of slanting coverage, but deliberately not covering the news at all. I told you the other day, you know, that the Los Angeles Times, in their initial coverage, hours, and when I say hours, the shooting of those deputies happened at about 7 o'clock at night. So before the print edition comes out the following morning, they have hours. There was no mention of it. Who would be calling me right now? And why is my phone on? It's just every day. Right? He goes on. However, the real warping in the news is not just slanting of coverage, but deliberately not covering the news at all. In the last 2 weeks, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has achieved the most stunning breakthroughs in Middle East diplomacy in over half a century. Countries once hostile to Israel, such as the UAE and Bahrain, now formally recognize it. Formally recognize it. So it's not like we're going to open up a consulate there or whatnot. Formally recognize. Other Arab nations may follow. I would say that that is a sure thing, and it just hasn't been announced yet. Ancient existential enemies, Kosovo and Serbia, also agreed to normalize their relationship with Israel by signing economic agreements. Yet none of these historic events have drawn much media attention. All of them would have been canonized were they achievements of the Obama administration. Yeah, could you imagine the trumpets and everything being rolled out for that shit? In 2017, the media suggested that Trump's plans to get out of the Iran nuclear deal and the Paris Climate Accord, to confront Chinese economic aggression, to forge new alliances between Israel and moderate Arab regimes, to isolate and ascendant Iran, to close the southern border to illegal immigration, to jawbone NATO alliance members into honoring their defense expenditure commitments, and to destroy ISIS and weaken Hezbollah were all impossible, counterproductive, or sheer madness. And now, an embargoed and bankrupt Iran is teetering on the brink. Its international terrorist appendages, including Hezbollah, are broke. China is increasingly being ostracized by much of the world. The U.S. has cut its carbon emissions, often at a rate superior to those nations still adhering to the Paris Climate Accord. Cross-border illegal immigration has been reduced, according to any metric. ISIS was bombed into near dissolution. Moderate regimes in the Middle East are ascendant. Radical cliques like Hamas and Al-Qaeda are not. More NATO members are meeting their commitments. The alliance's aggregate defense investments are way up. Is any of this considered news? Not really. Instead, every 3 or 4 days, the public is fed a series of bombshells, much like the daily hysterias of the Mueller investigation, into alleged collusion between the Trump team and Russia, a two-year media hype dud. In recent weeks, the media warned that Trump was dismantling the post office to disrupt mail-in balloting. Trump, we're told, has decided never to concede his sure loss in November and might have to be forcibly removed, perhaps by the military. We read that Trump defiled the memory of fallen American soldiers in cemeteries abroad. We are lectured that Trump supposedly never took COVID-19 seriously. All of these stories are either demonstrably untrue, were supported only by anonymous sources, or were sensationalism of authors hawking books. Yet such concocted melodramas will continue each week until Election Day, while fundamental geostrategic shifts abroad brought about by American diplomacy will by intent go unnoticed. The news, as we once understood it, is dead. How about that? It has been replaced by the unnews, a political narrative created by partisans who believe the noble ends of destroying Trump justify any biased means necessary, including destroying their own reputation and craft. Now, I would tell you this. Take the word Trump out of there and just put it in a blank. So it's not just about Trump. It's the fact that they believe that they have a vote, and not just on the op-ed page anymore, that their vote extends to your news. And by virtue of what we include, and most importantly, exclude, we can shape what you think, and we have a moral responsibility to shape what you think. Yeah, interesting. In a democracy, not supposed to really operate like that. I don't think in theory. So I think, yeah, that sentence, the news as we once understood it is dead. It has been replaced by the unnews. And this is an absolute brilliant observation. It's a well-articulated observation. The news now today, as you see it, is a political narrative created by partisans who believe the noble ends of destroying Trump justify any biased means necessary. And again, and then we see these collisions of what the majority of the nation believes, and then what this small, I would say this smaller part of the country that thinks that they can, you know, that they can convince people that down is now up. And you're going to see that again in the trials of those police officers in Minneapolis. You're going to see the clash of this. We're going to tell you what's right. We're going to tell you what you saw, and don't believe anything else. And then we have these friction points when they run into each other. And it's not interesting to me. It's incredibly concerning when, you know, you have a country that we don't even discuss the truth. And the people that are supposed to bring you the truth don't give a shit about it. They care about furthering their own political agenda. And so, anyway, good morning to you on a Friday morning. The 18th day of September, when Monday shows up, 10 days left in September, and then we're into October, for the love of God. How about that? So, Whitney Houston sings the national anthem. We'll check the news. Greg Lotus will join me. We'll talk about raising girls. We'll talk about food a little bit. And good morning to you. Ooh. this is dedicated to the Mensa Brothers. Yeah, if you didn't listen to yesterday's show, you should make sure that you do that, because they're normally pretty good. Yesterday, I thought they were great, and it's a combination of interesting stuff relative to a little bit of military history. We talk about the invasion of Incheon, which was a miracle, something that we would never even attempt today. And then we also talk about the Battle of Antietam, which was the bloodiest single day in United States military history, that happened on September 17th. We talk about that. And then we talk about something that Tim and I had a conversation about at about 5 in the morning, and that is the concepts of shame and guilt when it comes to dealing with traumatic experiences. And you're lucky if you're unencumbered by either one of those, that you don't feel shame about it, or you don't feel guilty that you are culpable in it. If you do, it makes the equation much more problematic. And so, but one of the things I really do appreciate about my friends is their absolute candor when we talk about this kind of stuff, their candor in terms of talking about their own lives. And I know that people find that inspirational, because they send me emails and tell me to make sure you thank those guys, because I was sitting here listening, and their examples of, you know, what they talk about and the way they share their lives are pretty powerful. So anyway, this is dedicated to the Mensa Brothers here on a Friday morning.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country, we care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Oh, yeah, that winning thing. What about trying hard? Well, good luck if that's your metric. Good luck. All right. Time to check the weather. Currently in Quantico, it is cloudy and 70 degrees. Mild weather on the East Coast. Cloudy and 74. Shout out to Sergeant Major Brian Zikafus, who retires from the Marine Corps today. So I know friends that are headed down that way. So one of the best sergeant majors I ever worked with in my life. He was the sergeant major of Regimental Combat Team 1 in Afghanistan. Z, as he's known to his to those who of us who worked with him. Talk about a pro. I mean, a professional's professional. You know, Sergeant Major Zikafus, man. He's like that group of, you know, officers and staff NCOs that deployed to Afghanistan. There's just, you know, it was an amazing group, and they were just like the most professional and best group I'd ever seen. When somebody, they all knew how to do the same thing. One, dial down the tension, right? Okay, I got this. You come with me. I'll let you know how this works. And then it would be, all the right things would have got done. And that happened like that all the time, right? Yeah, I mean, it was just amazing. It was the way the world is supposed to be. Yeah, no shit, man. It was awesome. And so he retires today. And I think he's headed up to Maine but he's a hunter. So he will be headed around the world to hunt, and he's a pretty active dude. So to Sergeant Major Zikafus, you know, congratulations on an awesome career. I'm sure somebody has a reason why he wasn't Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, but I'm sure as hell it wasn't a good one, because he's that kind of guy. So anyway, he retires today down in Camp Lejeune, where it's cloudy and 74 right now. Yeah, how about that little segue? 29 Palms, sunny and 82. Sun was out in Southern California yesterday. Yeah, smoke gone. Looked like a normal day for the first time in I don't know how long. At Pendleton, sunny and 73. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark, cloudy and 72. Camp Butler on Okinawa, it is dark, cloudy, and 80 degrees. In the northern part of the continent of Australia, it is dark, cloudy, and 81 in Darwin. And in Oslo, Norway, in case you didn't know where Oslo is, they have four weather alerts. What's going on in Oslo? It's the first time we've ever done this. Sunny and 73 in Oslo. Okay, first weather alert is potential disruption due to forest fire until midnight, local time in Oslo. The second one is potential disruption of forest fire on Saturday. The third one, the same thing from Wednesday and extends tonight till midnight. So that's an old one. And then another one for Saturday and Sunday. So they've got forest fires that are causing problems in Norway. How about that? Who knew? All right, we'll take a break. Some interesting stuff in the news. Yeah, how about that? TikTok going to be banned. Colleen going to be crushed. What is the impact on girls who want to make videos where they dance? I don't know, but not going to be pleasant in the McNamara house. So we will we'll take a quick break. Marines and sailors from Camp Pendleton going to join the firefighting efforts here in California. Well, they don't actually fight fires. I think they take over some of the support missions and that free up firefighters to do what they do. So anyway, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll check news headlines. More of All Marine Radio coming up. Whoa, what just happened? More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
We used to get together every week. She's been home from her last deployment for months now, and I haven't seen her once.
He's just been different since he got back from Iraq. One minute he's ready to go, and the next he doesn't want anyone around.
The nightmares are back and seem to be getting worse. Shouldn't he be sleeping better after all these years?
A lot of people don't understand what veterans go through during their service or when they come back. And that's okay.
But everyone can help.
You can make a difference in the life of a veteran.
You stood by us when we were in uniform, so stand by us now.
Like my brother did, when he wouldn't take no for an answer.
Like my wife did, when she asked the right questions.
Like my friend did, when she made the call.
Take a stand for those who served our country.
If you're a veteran in crisis, or know one who is, the Confidential Veterans Crisis Line is here for you. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's service members and veterans are strong, forged out of bravery, sacrifice, and duty. They are diverse, unique, from all corners of the country, and thanks to their common experience, a family for life. But whether they served in lands far away or communities close to home, some of these men and women may face difficult times or even crisis. But sometimes reaching out for help can be the most challenging and worthwhile mission of all for veterans, service members, reserve, and National Guard. Thankfully, friends, family, and communities are standing by their service members and veterans now more than ever. We're all in this together. When you recognize something isn't right, make the call to the Veterans Crisis Line or Military Crisis Line. During times of crisis, reach out and call. Dial 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 or chat online at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
Hi, I'm Gary Sinise. Our veterans put everything on the line to protect our freedom. We may never be able to repay them for their sacrifice, but we can show them just how much we appreciate all they've done. You can help by simply sharing your time, lending a warm smile, a supportive hand, or a sympathetic ear to someone who needs it. Everyone can do something to make veterans know just how much we appreciate their service. Please visit www.volunteer.va.gov. What will you do?
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
My go-to someday.
And a long neck bottle on the table beside my bed.
Oh, Colleen's here. She's getting her pay cut this month. She's not doing her SAT shit she's supposed to.
She didn't sign her name out.
Yeah, shut up. Get out of here, I'm on the radio. Where'd you get that sweatshirt?
She's walking around in my
called Dream Walking.
She's calling my name again. Day is breaking, I ain't waking up.
You can't tell if it's him or if it's me.
I'm on a roll now. I gotta know how this dream ends.
Alright, Toby Keith singing in my key. Yeah, that's no bullshit. I told Grant Nusha might kick his ass and I've never even done that. Top stories in Stars and Stripes. There's a story, I don't know, about a month or so ago, where the modern version of the M113, which is kind of a comm vehicle, I think that it's what it's used for now in an ambulance, was in a vehicle accident in South Korea in which there were fatalities. Actually, it was on August 30th, so it wasn't even a month ago. The South Korean driver was drunk and speeding before the fatal crash with a U.S. vehicle, police say. There was no American fatalities, but there were South Korean. And you can imagine any time that happens, it's a big story because tactical vehicles out on civilian roads and then somebody gets killed. And so, I mean, it's pretty easy to, you know, the demonstration begins before the news, you know, is even done being reported. POW MIA Recognition Day. That's going on. So you'll see stories about that. Lo, all these years later, and what you're seeing now more and more is, given things like Google Earth, right, and the digitalization of files, and you're seeing more and more of these of our MIAs being found. So anyway, that in the news. Today is National POW MIA Recognition Day. And so, I mean, to me, there's a special sadness about on today. And that is, you know, you didn't get an explanation. You never had a funeral. And, that's rough. So that in the news, Marines and sailors from Camp Pendleton, join the fight against California wildfires. And then there's a picture of a fire crew like going into the mountains. That tends not to be what they do. The active duty troops will travel about 350 miles north this week to assist efforts with the Creek Fire in the Sierra National Forest, according to a news release from U.S. Army North. U.S. Army North? The element of U.S. Northern Command's Joint Force Land Component. Oh, I got it. So, I was going to say it should be Northcom should be, but if Army North, do we not have Marine North? We don't have a Marine component in the Northern Command? Interesting. They join about 200 soldiers from Joint Base Lewis-McChord, home of the 2nd ID, who deployed in late August to help combat fires in the northern part of the state. In total, more than 17,000 firefighters, including about 1,200 California National Guard members, are working throughout the state, which has seen more than 3.3 million acres burned during wildfire season. Let's see if they have any. Marine personnel assigned to Camp Pendleton's 7th Engineer Support Battalion, 1st Marine Logistics Group, 1st Marine Expeditionary Force. They will be fitted for personnel protective equipment, including fire-retardant clothing, gloves, and hard hats, and begin training on fire behavior and fire line safety at the base as early as yesterday, according to the release. They're scheduled to deploy to Central California on Saturday to receive hands-on training in fire suppression methods. Yeah, what are they going to have to do, though? First MLG will provide highly capable Marines and sailors to assist in wildland fire suppression efforts. What do? You're not going to stick them in a fire, though. The soldiers' work is not directly to fight the fire, but rather keeping the blaze from spreading or reigniting. There you have it. Let's see. Specialist Michael Wybera, an Army photojournalist, said he's been documenting the work that soldiers have been doing on the fire lines. A lot of them are dressed head to toe in personal protective equipment and traveling uphill digging lines and delimbing trees. They spend about 3 or 4 days on the line, sleeping in tents, and then they rotate out. So that would make sense, right? So the firefighters are up there taking care of that, knocking that down or trying to, and then you're behind them dealing with, you know, flashes and hot points and stuff like that that is commensurate with your capabilities. So that in the news. There's one other story. China flies 18 warplanes near Taiwan during U.S. envoy's visit. And then the Indo-Pacific commander underscores the need for a stronger missile defense on Guam. Who was our envoy? Under U.S. Secretary of State, Keith Kratch got off the plane in Taiwan, and the Chinese flew a bunch of planes. Whoa, we're scared. Flew a bunch of planes there. From the Wall Street Journal, top headlines, TikTok. Yeah. The United States will ban TikTok downloads and the use of WeChat as of Sunday. So you better download all your data, because and then that will force it to be sold completely to some American entity. Blah, 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 blah. Wall Street Journal also ranks 2021 best colleges in America. Harvard leads the rankings. So that in the news. There's an interesting story about General Motors, right? Once one of the legendary American companies. The incredible, it's the headline, the incredible shrinking GM. This new CEO, Mary Barra, bets that smaller is better. And then one other story that you should know about, lawmakers close in on spending deal to avert a shutdown. So all that in the news. Top stories in Marine Corps Times, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll get Greg Lotus on. Steely-eyed killers no more. Oh, my God. What will the Corps' culture look like under a new force design? One retired Marine expert fears that the aggressive warrior ethos of the Corps has been put at risk by the new force design proposed by Commandant of the Marine Corps General David Berger. So, who had the unmitigated gall to say this in public? One expert and retired Marine now fears the aggressive warrior ethos. Blah, blah, blah. Who is this? Ah, Mark Kansian. When you look at this new structure, the focus is on aviation and artillery, not the infantry. Mark Kansian, a retired Marine officer, who now works as a senior advisor for the Center for Strategic and International Studies, said this summer, the focus of, this is old news, the focus of the infantry now is to protect the artillery, rocket security forces, I mean infantry. The comments took place during a July 30 webinar entitled Redesigning the Marine Corps for Future War, Necessity or Madness, held by conservative-leaning think tank, the Heritage Foundation. The aggressive culture the Marine Corps has was born out of the Spanish-American War in 1898 as a way to differentiate the Corps from the Navy, said Heather Venerable, an associate professor at the Air Command and Staff College and the author of How the Few Became the Proud, An Early History of Marine Corps Mystique. We should get her on. The Corps depicted the Navy as in the distance providing support and sailors as cowards when they participate in combat on while they participate in combat on land. So the Corps really begins using imagery to celebrate the offensive, which naturally only increases during battles of World War I. Blah, 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 blah. Quote, it is not absent from Marine Corps history to make big adjustments when those adjustments are needed, says Dakota Wood, who's a proponent of General Berger's strategy. So it's interesting. But I just wondered who was saying that in public. Because if you notice, there hasn't been one retired general that's come out and supported General Berger. Not one. Zero. And it's not like they haven't been pressed to it, because you know they have. Hey, you know, we could really use you to come and support this. Sorry, not doing that. Have you seen Mattis's name attached to this? Nope. You see Dunford publicly speaking and saying, hey, this is the right thing to do? No, you haven't seen that either. So it's kind of curious. Kind of curious. Rocket security forces. All right, and top stories in Early Bird, and then we'll take a break, and we'll get Greg Lotai on, and we'll do a little McLotus. Talk about raising girls. He's got one. Top five stories. One, reports of an active shooter at Fort Hood were untrue. a soldier was arrested for making homicidal threats. Number two, U.S. Admiral talks third Chinese aircraft carrier. Go ahead and build that big ship. Oh, now we're shit talking. That's awesome. Who said this? Quote, good on him. It makes the argument that carriers are important, said Admiral Chris Grady, the commander of U.S. Fleet Forces on Thursday. We have them. They want them, and they're building them. To me, that makes all the sense. They're a maritime power, and they understand the great value that comes from carrier aviation and how that can shape the international environment. It's taken us over 100 years to get that right, Grady said during the American Association of Naval Engineers 2020 Fleet Maintenance Modernization Symposium. Lots of blood, lots of loss of life, a lot of sweat and tears to make naval aviation work. We got a huge lead and one that will continue to expand in the future. Go ahead and build a ship, but to build the ecosystem that is naval aviation that brings that ship to life, that's going to take a lot of years. So anyway, military names new judge for Guantanamo Bay 9/11 trial. Amazing, we're still doing that. Number four, union wants DOD Education Association schools to move to remote learning, citing death of Fort Knox DOD school counselor from COVID. Number five, top admiral, no condition where U.S. should conduct nuclear tests at this time. All right, we'll take a break. Greg Lotus going to join us here in a minute. More of All Marine Radio on a Friday coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.